This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to this October 18th edition of Invest Talk. I appreciate you being with me. Above average investing for the average investor. We do this every day, everybody. Love doing it. Want to hear from you. I'm here to bring you information and opinion and help answer any of your questions if I can, but maybe most important, to give you perspective, to help you feel more confident about the decisions you are making about your portfolio. Now, markets move in complex ways. There's complex issues that move them. Information spreads at incredible speeds now, and once that information is disseminated, everyone reacts to it. Government statistics released daily, updated constantly, corporations and constantly scrutinized by experts, pick over every aspect of their businesses. These analysts, the experts, don't miss one bit of information that they can ferret out. However, time after time, they come up with the wrong conclusions. You want an example? You want an example of the huge wrong conclusions that I'm referring to that they come up with? Think about the abundance of buy recommendations by these experts on internet companies just before the bubble burst in 2000. There was extremely few analysts predicted that many of these stocks would lose, on average, more than 50% of their value. And there's hundreds of those dot-com companies that went out of business. I remember talking about them on the radio. That how are they going to make money? How are these dot-com, I'm telling people, how does it make money? Most of them were never going to make any money. Yet, stock prices, IPOs coming out all the time, prices going up. Do you remember how much the tech bubble burst? How much? Analysts at the time were extremely bullish. What happened? The NASDAQ, the tech-heavy NASDAQ, rose to 5,100 points in early 2000. The market started to crash in March, by the way, of 2000. So it was at 5,100 in early 2000. And by 2002, it bottomed at 1,100, 80% before it started to recover. And now from 2000, from 5,100 down to 2002, and it recovered in 2006, 4 years later, to 2000. That's how much it fell, from 5,100 down to 1,100, back up to 2,000, from the year 2000 to the year 2006. It took that long for it to recover. To 2,000, not to the 5,000. All you ever heard of the analysts back then was buy. They were very, very wrong. So who do you believe? You know, the buck stops with you. You're the one. You're the one that makes the decision. So you need to learn the basics, the historic principles and strategies, and maybe I can help you with that. We can talk live during this hour, 4 to 5 Pacific time, or you can leave your question on our 24-hour listen line at 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve and Justin, good morning. This is Scott calling from the Bay Area. I just wanted to comment on a topic that was discussed on the Monday, October 16th program. Been thinking about it and just wanted to leave a comment and question. It has to do with the tax structuring plan the new administration is proposing that allow corporations to bring their money back from overseas. And the discussion on the program had to do with how the money coming back from overseas being not taxed or taxed at a lower rate would allow for $4,000 on average per working American tax increase. That's the money they'd see in their pocket. And I think the discussion had to do with how the companies be allowed to bring their money back from overseas would be investing in efficiency and expansion, and then thus stimulating demand, et cetera. And my thought and what I've been sort of thinking about since that program had to do with the improving efficiencies for companies Somebody like me who's sort of just working, I'm not a full-time investor, definitely trying to get educated. When I hear efficiency, companies improving efficiency, I think of automation and companies' desire to eliminate payroll positions through efficiency improvements. So sort of my concern is, and what your thoughts are, that sort of begs the question is, these companies that would take that money and improve efficiency, would that potentially translate into a net loss of jobs? So just curious to hear your thoughts on that, and keep up the great work. Thank you, and talk to you soon.
And of course, that's the argument, right? The companies, when they describe improving efficiencies, they're saying, well, we get to cut people's salary or get rid of people. And that has been the argument ever since the invention of the automobile, when you got rid of the buggy whips and every buggy whip makers and horse trainers. When the automobile came along, it destroyed all kinds of industries and all kinds of jobs, and that's true to this day. Robotics destroying all kinds of jobs. A steel mill of 30, 40 years ago has 90% more employees than it does today because of efficiencies. So the argument is all those jobs get lost. And to a degree, that is true. But also, new jobs are always created. Remember that book I always talk about, Creative Destruction? Where there's jobs being destroyed, there's always jobs being created. You hate to be the person being destroyed, of course, and that's a tragedy of your job being destroyed, but there's always other jobs being created from an economic point of view. If you stand back and look at the cold, hard facts, and from an economic point of view, there's more jobs. So they might be more engineering jobs, more. Think about all the tech jobs are out there that were never there 20 years ago, 10 years ago. So you can't stop that progression, and you try to get into fields that you won't be, X'd out when the time comes, but there's a lot of jobs being destroyed, but there's also jobs being created all the time. So I try not to agonize over it, because what are you going to do? You're going to stop progress? You're going to stop efficiency? Is that... makes sense? I see some states try to do this. For instance, I was up in Oregon the other, about a year ago, and you're not allowed to pump your own gas in Oregon because they don't want to lose that job. Every place else that I've been in the United States, almost all of them, you can pump your own gas. Just pump, but not in Oregon. Well, what does that do? Well, it obviously adds cost per gallon because you got to pay for that guy. And I guess they don't care, but you, because of efficiencies, you don't do that. Well, it's okay. Are you going to do that with electric cars too? Let me plug in your electric car for you. I mean, you can't stop that progress. You just can't. Will, San Diego, how you doing, Will?
Oh, pretty good, Steve. I was taking a look at JD.com and was wondering what would be a good entry point.
Now. We talked about this yesterday, Will, on the radio. JD is everybody. JD.com is that Chinese retailer we talked about yesterday. And I said yesterday that it looks like it's found support. If it breaks below $37, that's 200-day moving average, you get out. It has come down from $48 down to $40, and that's about a 20% correction. And the numbers look really strong. The sales are growing 30, 40% a quarter. Earnings are going to be up 254% this year, another 87% next year. But it's only 86 cents. I also warned that it's still overvalued. It's still overvalued. But with that kind of sales growth, it kind of deserves to be overvalued. So the current PE is like 120. Based on next year's earnings of 86 cents, that is like a 40 PE. That's the lowest it's been in the last 5 years is 80. So I think this is the price that it should hold. It should try to hold this price. And this is where you would buy it. If it broke the 200-day moving average down, which is 37, Will, then you get out.
Get out, yeah. Okay, yep. But it's still pretty speculative.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's speculative. Anytime you get a PE above 4, above 20, you're starting to get very risky. I won't say speculative. I would say much more risky. How's that?
Okay.
Okay, well, okay. Thanks
Sounds
for the call.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Thanks for the call. I'm Financial Advisor Steve Peasley. Do you have questions about the impact of oil prices on your portfolio? What's the downside of the low oil prices? Let's talk about it. You're listening to Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART for your questions. 888-992-4278. So what's on the table today? What do we want to talk? What's the topics? Dividends can really boost portfolio performance, but which strategy is best? Dividend stocks that yield better or have better growth of dividends? The higher yielding ones or the ones that have maybe lower yield but are growing their dividends? That's going to be our main talking point today. A couple of things we didn't get to yesterday. Vanguard warns. The chairman of Vanguard was warning about the market. I want to talk about that. And America's number one financial regret. We didn't get to those two things yesterday. And today, I wanted to talk about, I mentioned already creative destruction, but there's a new book called The Four, out by Random House, written by Scott Galloway. And he says, Amazon, Apple, Google, and Facebook will all go away within 50 years. That's what he says. Is he right? You know, he's probably right. I want to talk about that. Why is he right? Why is that true? We're going to discuss it. I think it's pretty interesting. Those are going to be what we're going to talk about today. The market was up, but just barely. Now, you're going to say, if you were looking at the market, how's that? That's crazy. The Dow was up 160 points, new high. Wow. Okay, but did you see what the NASDAQ was? Up a half a point. The S&P was up 2 points. The Dow was only 30 stocks, and a bulk of that, much of that move, was IBM. So I'm saying that the market was down. And if you look a little deeper in the market, you know how I've been quoting you for now for a couple of months here, the number of stocks up on high volume and the number of stocks down on high volume. Well, today, the number of stocks up on high volume were 59. The number of stocks down on high volume, 153. And it's been doing that for months, couple, 3 months now, where there's a lot more stocks down on high volume than stocks up on high volume. It can't keep doing that and the market keep moving up. That has to turn around. Now, it could turn around. I mean, I'm not saying that, definitely telling you the market's going to fall. It doesn't say that. It tells you that internally, not nearly the number of stocks are moving up than that it tells us in the big indexes. You got to remember indexes, many of them are price weighted. So the higher the price, and many of these big blue chip stocks, I mean, especially the tech, they haven't split. So the price of their stocks are very, very high. The higher they are, the more impact on the indexes they have. Doesn't mean the whole market's healthy, though. Not that the whole market's falling apart. It's not. It's just not near as healthy as you might think. This is Invest Talk, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley. What money questions might be on your mind? You can reach me now at Invest Talk at 888-99-CHART. Let's talk to DeCoss in Fremont. How you doing?
Hi, Steve. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for the call.
Yeah. So my question is, what is your recommendation on Chipotle? If you see the chart lately, it goes up one day, falls down the next day, and, it's kind of a confused state right now.
Yeah. Yeah, this is Chipotle Mexican Grill, everybody. I think most people know who they are. CMG is the symbol, operates 2,200 fast casual Mexican restaurants in the United States, Canada, France, Germany, and the UK. They're going to make they made $1.32 in 2016. But in 2015, they made $15 a share. So that's a huge hit they took, right? 2017, they're going to recover to $7.45 a share, which is a huge jump. But the next year, they're going to go up about 42% to $10.57. So the stock is $318 a share. That's a 31 PE. Still pretty darn high. But the growth rate is starting to pick up again. Remember, they had all that bad news, DeCoste, about, you know, tainted food, and they had to close down a restaurant too. And they had issues with some people getting sick and, you know, where the food, and they, all those things came out, and that really hurt the stock. Because it was $490 a share just, what, last month? And it was almost $700. It was $750 in 2015 before all that bad news came out. So it's way down from its peak. So, you know, most people look at, well, gee, it was $750, and now it's only $318. That's half. Wow, well, more than half. That must be a bargain. No, it's not. It was just crazily expensive back then, too. Because it was making $15 an hour, $15 a year versus now $10.50. So don't think it's cheap, but on a chart basis, it has been moving sideways since middle of August, up, down, up, down, up, down, but mostly sideways. And now it's starting to have a bias to the upside. So if you wanted to take a risk on it, this is the price you'd probably take the risk at. Knowing full well, this is a risky stock because it's pretty darn pricey. Okay.
But and its earnings are also due next week. So you think in the light of that?
Well, I think the earnings are gonna be pretty good because it moved up 3 or 4 days ago and today it was down. But I think people are anticipating decent earnings coming out. That's what I think. But that may not move the stock because it already might have moved because of that. You just never know. When the earnings come out, it's kind of rolling the dice. You just don't know if it's going to be great, in line with expectations, or below expectations. And you don't know if the investors have already built that into the price or not. You just never know. It could move either way.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate the call. CMG was a symbol of Chipotle Mexican Grill. I really like their food, just in case you wanted to know. They're going to go to BJ in Fremont. How you doing, BJ?
I'm doing good. Thanks for taking my call, Steve.
Thank you.
My question is regarding Berkshire Hathaway, B shares.
Yes.
What is, is it a good investment by dollar cost averaging from here the next 5 years into that?
If you keep it up when it falls, BJ, yes. This is my big fear. Berkshire Hathaway, everybody, that's Warren Buffett's company. And, you know, it almost acts like a mini mutual fund, even though it's a company. But he owns a lot of different companies inside Berkshire Hathaway. So it acts like a mini mutual fund. And it's pretty pricey PE range-wise, about 27. And that's the high of its five-year range. So it's not cheap. So, but dollar cost averaging, BJ, will work if you make sure you do it when this falls. Because it will fall in the next 5 years. It'll fall hard sometime. But keep buying it, and you'll recover, and you'll keep driving down your average price when it does fall. But I can't tell you when that will fall, BJ. No one can. Maybe it'll go up. It's $187 a share now. Maybe it'll go up to $250, and then it falls, right? We don't know. We don't know. So a dollar cost average is a good way to get into a stock over time. And I don't mind getting into this one by because it's like a mutual fund. So you're getting a lot of different companies inside. And you're getting Berkshire Hathaway's, Warren Buffett's method of picking stocks. If you'll notice, BJ, Warren Buffett himself, when his company is this expensive, he doesn't buy anything. He doesn't buy. He's very slow. You don't hear him buying much at all. He's gathering money for the next recession. He'll buy in the next recession. He'll be patient. That's what he does. And he just rides the ride in between recessions. So if you could wait for the next recession and then buy this, you'll be a lot better off. But that could be 2, 3, 4, 5 years. I don't know when the next recession will be. Okay? Thanks, BJ.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Human beings are habit-creating machines. Bad habits, too. One is thinking we're not smart enough. We all have to learn how to take control of our own financial lives, whether it's understanding health insurance or your 401k. Let me know if I can help with any of those kind of questions and answers. My direct line is between 4 and 5 Pacific time when we're live is 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast continues now. First, a couple of words for KPP Financial. We make many money choices, of course, and we try to be objective, look at the facts, look at our life situation. Some people choose to work with a registered investment advisor to help them in this pursuit, and one of the most important reasons is to be defensive, keeping risk at a minimum. It's not only a way to share the worry, it becomes a practical matter. A professional advisor has the resources and the experience. They study the market. They anticipate what might happen. For more than 20 years, KPP Financial has been serving clients all across America, and they're accessible, responsive, and maybe most important, the KPP principals invest right along with their clients. Parallel investing. To find out more about it and their programs, go to investtalk.com, click on the investment tab. Now let's continue with the podcast. Now let's get back to Invest Talk, answers to life's important money questions, and our direct line is 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. Okay, you know, we talk about dividends all the time, and, you know, I mentioned I have a short list of dividend ETFs that I like, and anybody wants that list, I'll send it to you. But what is better, buying the dip? Companies pay dividends, right? When a company pays a dividend, that's usually a big company, solid, has the financial wherewithal to do that. Growth companies don't pay dividends. They reinvest into their company. So usually there are bigger blue chip type stocks that pay dividends. So what kind of dividend, though? Should you buy a dividend paying company that is growing its dividend, or should you search for just high yielding dividends? Now, the difference here, let's say a company is paying 2% dividend, but every year it increases that dividend by 10%. So this year is 2%, next year is $2, and next year is 2.1%, then 2.21%, whatever it is. Keep growing its dividend payout. Another company pays 5%, but not necessarily grows the dividend. It doesn't go up, it stays at 5%. Which is a better company to be in? Now, believe it or not, of course, experts disagree. Okay, they disagree on this, which one's better. Because if you're getting a high dividend right up front and reinvesting that dividend in the company, and now you get more shares and you get more money, blah, 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 blah. And the other one says, well, wait a minute, if you invest in a company that's growing its dividend, that dividend keeps growing over time, and over a length of time, you're going to get that high dividend, but at least it's growing it the whole time. And if it's growing it, it's probably a better run company because it's able to increase that dividend. There's arguments both ways. You can argue it both ways. So I'm going to tell you right now that there's no one good answer. I'm also going to tell you that I really do like dividends that, companies that grow their dividends. And I'm going to warn you about buying companies that pay too high a dividend. You're probably wondering, well, why would that be a problem? Company paying too high a dividend? Because they can't keep it up. That could be a problem. How are they paying it? A lot of times, high dividend paying companies pay it by borrowing money or issuing new shares or issuing bonds just so they can pay the dividend. That's not sustainable. So you have to kind of understand the fundamentals of the company. Really high dividend paying companies, many times are very cyclical companies, and they make a lot of money in a short period of time, and then they don't make any money, and they cut the dividend. If you're going to be a dividend investor, you want stability in that dividend, no matter if it's a growing dividend or it's just a high dividend. You want stability. You want to know that they have the ability to grow that dividend years to come. I understand that Warren Buffett, Berkshire Hathaway, they make more money every year than the original cost of the Coca-Cola stock they bought 20, 30 years ago. They make more money in the dividend every year than their original cost, because it's so long ago and they got their cost basis is very, very low. Anyway, that's what happens over time. You got to be patient, though, with those dividends. Let's get back to our 24-hour anytime line, 888-99-CHART.
Yeah, hello there, Steve and Justin. My name's David from Florida. I'm calling about General Electric, GE. I'd like your take on that. I originally bought it about 3 years ago for $25 and some change, and now, as you know, it's been one of the worst stocks of the Dow this year, down to $23 or so. I'm just wondering if I should get out or if I should stay the course. I originally bought this as a long-term dividend play. I was just wondering what your take on that would be. General Electric. Thanks much.
Well, it's a big blue-chip company, $200 billion. GE, everybody knows who they are. Manufacturers, transportation, energy generation, consumer appliances, industrial, medical equipment. They're going to make $1.60 this year. They made $1.53 last year, $1.16 the year before, 35 cents the year before that. So they're at least are moving in the right direction, growing their earnings. Sales in recent quarters have gone down, and of course, last three quarters. And the stock peaked in at the beginning of the year at $30, and now it's at $23. It's a $23 stock going to make $1.63. So that means the PE is right around 15 now, based on next year's earnings. And the five-year range is 15 to 90. Frankly, the dividend is now 4.2%. Frankly, I think you hold on to it, even though it hasn't performed that well. I think, remember, it's going to be a cyclical company, but I don't think we're moving into a recession anytime soon. And Europe and Japan are just now turning around. So I have a feeling that GE might improve numbers going forward. Sales. So I don't like to have a little bit of debt, but that could be financing of their big equipment they sell. I'm gonna have to look into it. GE is a big industrial company. I mean, I would not buy it, but I don't know if I'd sell it if I've held on to it for this long at this point. Okay? That'd be my opinion. How much risk is in your retirement portfolio right now? Risk. Risk is essential to a growing portfolio, but how much is too much for you? You specifically. You can take our free risk analysis quiz. It's just a very short thing, a few questions, and it'll help you understand risk and how much risk you feel comfortable with. And it will give you a score between 0 and 100, 80 being the S&P 500, by the way, the risk of the S&P 500. If you like you can find out if your current portfolio is a good match for you, because I can put that into the system on my side and we can get a risk score of that as well. You start off by going to investtalk.com and just answer the few risk questions. Click on the Invest Talk tab.
Have you visited our financial news carousel? Many of our Invest Talk insiders make this their home base for financial news. Why go there? It's a collection of important stories all in one place. From late-breaking events and news to resource stories that can help you make informed money choices. Check it out. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab, and then Invest Talk Insider.
888-992-4278. Okay, let's talk about Vanguard and Bill McNabb, who's the chairman, and what he said recently. He said, remember, this is Vanguard. Vanguard gathered $300 billion more dollars in the first 9 months of this year. People going into the Vanguard funds. So he's the chairman, and that's just what they got in this year. That's not their size. They're much bigger than that. He says, quote, "We expect there could be a decent-sized correction at some point." Now, I don't think that takes a genius to say that. Because of course there's going to be a correction at some point, because there always has been and always will be. So that doesn't really tell us much, does it? A decent-sized correction at some point. Okay, so what he said, though, that was much more interesting He said that valuations are very high, which that's obvious too. But the very interesting thing he says, he expects 10-year returns near 6% per year the next 10 years. Over 6% a year. Remember that the average return is like 9-10%. And that includes, by the way, dividends, which is very important, dividends. But he has ratcheted down pretty sharply by about 30% per year over the next 10 years. Now, why is that more interesting? Because he's saying without saying it, that the returns we've had in the last 10 years are way above normal, and therefore we need a return to the mean. Therefore, the returns have to be below normal for 10 years. He didn't say that, but you can infer that pretty clearly. Not too difficult. Doesn't take a rocket science. Ever since the recession in 2008, we're 9 almost on 10 years, we've had much better returns than normal. And so he's just saying, we're going to return to the mean. It's all math. It's simple. It's not anything rocket science, but it's pretty amazing that he admits it. Most of them wouldn't say that. They would just ignore it and go on. They don't want to. Remember, that's negative for them. Remember, they make their money by gathering money. They tell you that, performance is not going to be very good. Does that give you any confidence to put more money with them? Kind of interesting. We're here for you, a beginner or experienced investor at 888-99-CHART. If you're a podcast listener and can't reach us and reach me during this live program, and we're live 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday, you can always record your question on our anytime line in the same number, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve, Justin. This is Wade from Philadelphia. Just wanted to know your thoughts on Regeneron Pharmaceuticals. Ticker symbol is REGN. Just wanted to know what you think about this company fundamentally, and what would be a good point to buy this stock. I look forward to hearing your thoughts on your show. Once again, I love your show. Thank you.
Well, I do find it, this is Regeneron Pharmaceuticals. I find it interesting that insiders have been buying pretty consistently in the low price range that it's in. And I say that with, when I say that, I mean $340 to $400 a share. And it's at $439 right now. When I say low price, I am referring to low price in relationship to its history. It was at $600 a share back in 2015. Okay, so that's where it was before. It's going to make $16.47 next year, after making $14.94 a share this year, after making $11.34 a share last year, after making $8.12 a year before that. So, it's really growing in the right directions. Sales growth is 20% in the most recent quarter, but averaged more like 15% in the last four quarters. Before that, the four quarters before that is averaging 25% or so sales growth. So what Regeneron Pharmaceuticals, they develop drugs to treat eye diseases and inflammatory diseases and cancer. $47 billion company, big company, does not pay a dividend, which is interesting. So what's $16.47 worth? Remember, it's a $439 stock. Well, at a 20 PE, that's what, 320 or so? So, and remember, it's 439. So what's that, 30 PE-ish? 25, 30? Well, five-year range is 26 to 73. So it's kind of on the lower end of its range. Return on equity is very healthy at 33. It's right above its 200-day moving average on a chart, which is $430. It's 439. I probably would, it looks like it's going to try to hold that range. But that would, if I owned it, I would get out if it broke below 430. I'd just get out, give up, because that's a 200-day moving average. It's probably going to go down to 340 to 350 if it breaks that. Now, recently it peaked at about 520 in July, and it's fallen off. So now the question is, it looks like it's lower lows and lower highs. So you need to find, you need to let it come back up and break maybe, you know, the, at least the 50-day moving average maybe. You need to see some strength before I would buy it. Before I'd buy it. REGN is the symbol, everybody. Okay. Amazon, Apple, Google, and Facebook will go away within 50 years. They'll be gone. This is according to a author, Scott Galloway, in his new book called The Four. And he's describing creative destruction. It's just what he's describing. And that book I recommended over and over and over. And what he's telling you is tech, big tech, small tech, he don't care. Big tech will be gone. It will be changed so much over the years because it's done it before. Okay, he went back and looked at the 100 top, the S&P 100 tech stocks over the years. And he said, if I can find that quote fast here, I probably should have. The Dow 100, from 100 years ago, only 11 have survived with the business cycle getting faster and faster. Okay, so all companies disappear. And it's faster and faster for tech. So they all, okay, do you remember Lucent Technologies? Have you looked at Motorola? These were companies that dominated their fields. And they're nowhere to be seen. These were big tech companies. What happened? I mean, there's a lot more. How about Wang Computers? Atari, do you remember Atari? It was a hot gaming stock for a number of years. Gone. All gone. How about Xerox? Still around, but it's microscopic. Right? All tech companies. So the question is, Amazon, Apple, Google, and Facebook, will they be around in 50 years? The chances are very good that 4 out of 5 will be gone. I think the one that has the best possibility of hanging around is Amazon. People are probably surprised. Why not Apple or Google? Well, because think about what Amazon does and think of what Apple and Google does. Google advertiser, basically, trying to get into other business. Apple makes phones, right, and computers. Well, that could be that somebody can come out with a brand new phone. Amazon, what do? They deliver products. They deliver products. You know, that's what they do over the internet. They deliver. I kind of like that for long term. You're listening to Invest Talk. We have just a few remaining minutes here in the hour. I want to take your call. Any call before the end. 888-99-CHART.
Hey guys, this is Clay from Baltimore. Thanks so much for the show. I had a general question about price targets. So there's another program I listen to where they take the estimated earnings per share on a GAAP basis, let's say $5, for December 2018, they multiply it by 16.5, and that's how they come up with their price target. So the first question is, what is the 16.5 that they're using? And generally, what do you think about price targets, and what's a good way of trying to come up with them instead of looking at, the price target is 50% higher. Oh, I should get into this. So any thoughts on that? I would appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Yeah, they just quoted you a quick and dirty way that they like to use to figure out the price, the future price of a stock by using next year's earnings estimates. And the 16.1, I don't know where they're getting that, but it's probably the average PE range in the last few years been higher over any length of time. The average PE over the market and over long periods of time is 15. They're using 16.1 probably because they're weighting the most recent price earnings ratio in the last, you know, decade or so has been a bit higher. Whether that's right or wrong, who knows? If you're going to do it quick and dirty, I have two ways that I recommend to people, and that's take next year's earnings per share, just like they do, and multiply it times the growth rate of the company. If the company's growing its earnings by 20% a year, take the next year's earnings per share and multiply it times 20. the growth rate. Now, that won't work for really, really fast small companies that are growing really, really fast, or very, very big companies that grow very, very slow. The other way, the other quick and dirty, and that's one of the reasons why I give you the five-year range of the PE, is take the range, the low price of the last 5 years for the PE range and the high for the last 5 years of PE range, and multiply the low by next year's earnings per share and the high by next year's earnings per share, and then you have a range, target price range that the stock should sell at if it sells at the same PE range it did in the last 5 years for the next year. Quick and dirty, those are not super accurate, either one, but they're just an estimate to give you some kind of framework, and you need to start somewhere to try to figure out how much a stock is worth, and is it overvalued or undervalued, and so that you make a decision knowing, well, it's undervalued, so maybe that's good, or it's way overvalued, and maybe I should be very much more careful with buying that one. So that's what they're using. There's nothing wrong with it. I'm not quite sure where they get 16.1, but my gut tells me they're averaging the PE of the S&P 500 over some few years somehow. They should tell you. I mean, I tell people how we do it. But I just use it quick and dirty in my mind. That's not how we really do it in the office, because we do a lot more work to get to that price. America's number one financial regret. 71% of Americans express regrets about their ability to manage their money. Now, this is according to a poll released Tuesday. Then they broke it down. Millennials, which is age group 18 to 34, are more likely than the two other age groups to have these regrets, 83% of them. Now, this is according to their survey. And then those age 18, 34, remember those are the millennials, are more likely than Generation Xers and baby boomers to have those regrets. Well, what do people regret the most? And that depends on your age group, you know, as I just said. 48% regret not planning earlier. Okay, 39 regret spending on non-essentials like coffee. Remember I had talked about this a few weeks ago, how much people, especially the millennials, spend at Starbucks every week, how much money they spend on that. So it, you know, it's kind of interesting. So the conclusion on this study is that way too many of people worry about or regret their ability to manage money. Well, you need, and they're not talking about in the market, they're talking about just managing their finances day to day to day. Work on it. You got to work on it. Is it time for a checkup? A reminder, if you live in Southern California, I have meetings scheduled at our main office in Dana Point on October 25th. Then I'm in San Jose on November 8th. You can schedule your one-hour meeting with me anytime you want. Go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab. And portfolio review. Time's up for the hour. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, and I'm glad you could make it today. On behalf of Justin Klein and everybody at the KPP family, thank you for listening, and we'll do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.